morning and welcome to Finding Your Way Home. My name is Sherry Doherty and I am your host today. We will be taking a deep dive into actually the rental market today. I know we've spent a bunch of time and the couple of first episodes talking about purchasing a home. And today I want to take a deep dive into the rental market, particularly to Kingston, because it is an important option and an option for some people for many, many reasons. So I want to give some attention and time to that as well. I wanted to start, though, by making sure that everyone is aware of a new scholarship program that is available to grade 12 students. So if you know anyone in grade 12, RE/MAX Canada is currently running a scholarship program where they can win funds for submitting an essay. And a couple of years ago, actually, a local student at Holy Cross was one of the winners. So that's pretty cool. But invite your grade 12 students in your life before March the 6th to go on to remax.ca, Quest for Excellence, and follow the instructions there. And if they write an essay about being in a charitable community, the vision for a brighter future, and or ensuring that Canadians have safe, secure, and affordable places to call home, they would have their opportunity to win. I believe it's one of 70 scholarships of $1,000 across Canada. And like I said, someone locally won it a couple of years ago. So that's pretty cool. Again, that would be remax.ca/quest for excellence, and encourage the grade 12 students in your life to apply for that scholarship, because I'm certain as they're going on to higher education, all additional funds that they can get to contribute would be of great assistance. So starting today, like I mentioned, we're going to take a deep dive into the rental market. And I wanted to just kind of paint the picture for people of what our rental market looks like, what average rents are, and even really down to what will be required of you when you're applying for tenancy. If I have time at the end, I'm also going to talk about how to be a good tenant, and I'm also going to talk about how to be a good landlord. So let's just take a deep dive into the data to start. The average one-bedroom apartment in the Kingston area rents right now for about $1,700. So you can get a luxury place that's more expensive. You can probably get a place that's a little bit less expensive. But on average, rent for a one-bedroom apartment is about $1,700. Rent for a two-bedroom apartment in the Kingston area is about $2,500. So again, there's going to be some differential as to where you are. Obviously, the closer to downtown, the closer to the schools, closer to the water that you get, you're going to be paying more. And the further out and a little more peripheral to proper downtown Kingston, you would be paying a little bit less. And then I also pulled the data on three-bedroom houses. And three-bedroom houses, obviously, some families are only here for a temporary period of time. We have Socomit teachers in. We have people coming in through the military system. And so sometimes they just decide they're going to be here for a year or two and they're going to rent. So the average rent for a three-bedroom house is about $2,500. And again, that could be anywhere right from downtown Kingston to maybe even Amherst View was the data that got pulled. But I wanted to kind of paint the picture of what that rental market is looking like. I know that it's gotten quite expensive, particularly student housing. They charge by the room, and I don't want to misquote any statistics, so I just pulled what was available. Essentially, though, one of the things that I really, really wanted to say to everyone is when you are considering a rental, the number one thing or piece of advice that I can give you is just be extremely careful about where this rental is being advertised and who you're being asked to send all of your identification to and your banking information and potentially a deposit to. So I am not biased because I am a realtor, but I highly recommend that you consider working with a professional realtor to help you find a rental, because at the end of the day, you're going to work with the standard AREA documents, which is the Ontario Real Estate Association documents. There are some for purchasing a home, but there's also a whole set for leasing a home. You are also then going to be paying your deposit most likely to the listing brokerage. So if the lease was listed by a licensed realtor as well, then that listing brokerage is also going to hold the deposit in trust. And that's really, really important because you're giving them all your personal information, right up to and including your social insurance number, all your identity, and that is a ripe opportunity for identity theft, which is pretty scary. I personally caution people to stay away from Kijiji or Facebook Marketplace, and particularly if you're being asked to quickly send a deposit to secure something, or if you haven't done a walkthrough and they're saying, oh, it's going to go to seven other people tomorrow, please, please be really careful and think about where you're sending that money to. I actually had an interesting story happen to me. I had a house for sale several years ago on College Street, and there was a nice, bright, shiny, sherry for sale sign on the front lawn. And someone that I worked with at an old workplace actually called me and said, is that house on College Street for lease? And I said, nope, it's just up for sale. The owners need to move on to their next chapter. And she said, that's really interesting because on Kijiji, it's up for lease. And so there was this whole scam, I'm going to call it, going on where someone was skimming actual valid houses for sale, posting them additionally for lease because they could even take like the MLS pictures and the data and things like that off of Kijiji or even Realtor or whatnot, and posing it as for lease. And the only reason that this circumstance got caught was because the lady who called knew me from my prior workplace and said, that doesn't seem right. That's not Sherry. And I saw Sherry's face on that front yard. So I'm going to make a phone call before I send this person who is telling me it's super urgent a deposit. Lo and behold, they had done something not nice and they were trying to pull a scam. And it goes right to the point, though, of reporting it to the police because it is fraud. And fortunately, the lady who knew me didn't go as far as giving out her identity or giving a deposit, but it's pretty scary and it does happen to a lot of people. So, like I said, I will always encourage people to work with a professional realtor or at least one of the property management companies. So Frontenac Property Management, I've had a lot of great experience with, or Nomad Homes, I've had a lot of great experience with. And if they're going to hold your deposit in trust or even your security deposit, and you've seen that and it's in writing on the proper forms, you can have great comfort. If you're not sure, though, consult a professional, and any of your local realtors can also assist you with leasing questions. It's really important to us that people get into good housing and safe housing. So when you're applying for a lease, what are you going to be asked for? And you are going to be asked for a lot of information, so you may as well have it ready before you start the process, because you can get into bidding situations and competitions on a lease, particularly in some of the really sought-after properties. And the landlord or the owner ultimately gets to make the decision about who leases the property. So the more quickly you get really good, solid documentation in, the better your chances are of getting into that home, and a lot of them are quite sought after. So I wanted to go through the list of things that you will be asked for as a potential tenant. You will be asked for valid ID, so that could come in the form of a driver's license, a birth certificate, or a passport. Again, be really careful about the means by which you're sharing these documents and who you're sharing them with. I 100% feel they should be sent through secure means and asked to be destroyed once the person that has received them has finished what they need to do with them. I also have to receive ID all the time for security identification purposes and FinTrack, which is financial crimes management. And as soon as I'm done getting people's information off their driver's license, I safely destroy them because I don't want to be holding a lot of people's driver's license information. The next thing that you're going to be asked for is your credit check. So landlords are looking for the fact that you have not defaulted on past rents, that you have a decent credit score. It doesn't have to be the very best credit score because everybody stumbles from time to time, but they do want someone that has a decent credit score. And that's going to be for whomever's names are going to be on the lease. So if it's you and a partner, or you and a roommate, or you and a spouse, they're going to want to see all of this information for both of you. They're also going to want to see employment letters, and these will be validated. So I've done it for some of my leasing clients. I will actually call employers because honestly, anybody can type something on a nice letterhead. And I always do the extra step of doing the due diligence to make sure it's valid. And sometimes it's not. Unfortunately, there are people who are dishonest, and for the protection of the owner of the home, you want to make sure you're getting an honest tenant in there with good intentions. So you will be asked to provide an employment letter or source of income, because some people don't have traditional employment, but it might be your T4 slips from last year if you're self-employed. It could be government supplemental income, but we know that that's a steady stream as well. And that's an acceptable form of income confirmation. You will be asked to sign a lease agreement. Most people use the Ontario standard form of lease, which is readily available on any of the government websites. So please look at what you're being asked to sign and see if it is that form or if there has been any amendments to it, and be very cautious about any amendments to it. Something that is a little not known but misunderstood is a lot of people have a no pets policy, and technically by the Rentals Act you can't necessarily say no pets. It's only a condo board that can actually add that in their bylaws. However, a lot of people prefer no pets, and it might come down to a decision between tenant A or tenant B, and they're equal, but one wants to bring in three cats, they're probably going to go with the other tenant just for their own preference purposes. So just be careful about some things like that and know your rights. All of the Landlord Tenant Act agreement information is readily available on local websites. You will be asked to most likely provide first and last month's rent, and in some cases, a key or a security deposit. And so all of that information is going to be very closely analyzed and make sure that it is absolutely valid. And if there's any question marks or if there's any red flags, you may not be afforded the opportunity to rent that property. And I understand that, again, whether this is a condo or whether it's a home or whether it's an apartment, the ultimate owner of it is one of their largest financial assets and they want to protect it. In the same vein, though, they have to do good things by making the property available, and they have to rent it out on a non-biased basis, and they have to follow all the Landlord Tenant Agreement Act rules as well. So everybody acting in good faith and being fair parties to the rental can sometimes make for a great arrangement. I've put lots of people into great homes. Sometimes they lease very quickly, depending on the home. Last year, I put someone into a big home out on Bath Road. I have a couple of places in Portsmouth and a couple of places downtown that I help to fill regularly for regular clients. And there is a real scrutiny that you should go through when you're vetting tenants, but also when you're being vetted, because you have many rights to privacy and fairness and equality. And in my opinion, everybody at the end of the day should be entitled to fair, safe, clean housing and get quiet enjoyment of the place that they're choosing to play out their life. So one of the things that I also did the other day with homes that were for sale, I also wanted to do with rentals. And I took some examples of the most expensive rentals available currently, as well as the least expensive rentals currently. Now, again, I'm going to put a disclaimer on it that I pulled my data from the realtor database. So these may be available on Facebook Marketplace. They may be available on Kijiji. They may also be available through the property management companies. But I took the realtor database because that is where I'm comfortable, and that is where I'm very confident that a licensed realtor is behind these lease opportunities. So I like to stick where I know that I'm in my safe zone. And so I'm going to talk about those specific examples. So right now we have a 2-bedroom available at 563 Union Street, unit number 2, and it is currently available for $1,800. So even based on the numbers we were talking about previously, a 1-bedroom rents for $1,700. So this being a 2-bedroom is at $1,800. So this is a decent rate. And I know people sometimes have to get creative with their living arrangements. And so maybe this is 2 roommates. So for 2 roommates, this could be $900 a month. And that may be attainable and affordable. Again, you have to look at what is included. So is heat and hydro and internet, potentially landscaping and snow removal all included, or are those going to be additional costs to the tenant? So be sure that you're looking really carefully at what is included in your lease agreement. That is an interesting one. It's been available for just a little while. And then looking ahead, kind of at the most expensive, we are flipping over to an actual 4-bedroom house, which is in Westbrook in the West End. But there is a 4-bedroom house at 613 Halloway that is available for $3,300 a month. And again, that is just the lease rate. And you would have to consider that is going to have to be fully heated, full hydro, for sure internet, and all the things that go along with that. You also have to be really careful and cautious about making sure that you have tenants insurance. And so the landlord will always be responsible for the building insurance. So in the event that there's a fire or a flood or something actually happens to the physical building. But as a tenant, you need to make sure that you get tenant insurance so that covers your contents within the home. So that's really important as well. And it's also additional costs. So you want to make sure that people have factored in all of those things. Then I flipped around a little bit more and I found another one bedroom that's currently available for $1,700 and it's at 652 Princess Street, number 223. So that is being available and rented. That is a largely student building and it's a lovely building. I've been in it recently, so it is a lovely building. It's been available for just over a month, so I'm sure that they're eager to get a tenant in there. And then again, looking at, you know, the big boy, let's call it, there is a unit available at 223 Princess Street, number 902, which is renting for $4,000 a month. So they're probably looking for an executive professional who is in town for just a limited period of time. Maybe they're here on a 1 or 2 year secondment. Often this is also our higher education students, so people who are doing a residency or an advanced PhD or whatnot, they don't want to live in traditional housing anymore because they've probably matured out of that. But that is also currently an option that is available, and it's a lovely unit as well. So I think that that's really important stuff. And I know that, you know, it's a competitive market. It's definitely not as competitive as it was, say, 5 years ago, either in the buying market or the selling market. But in all ways, you need to think about, you know, your housing options and whether or not you've ultimately decided trying to purchase a home is for you or whether or not you've decided that you want to rent. There's many reasons to make that decision. Rent is a nice, convenient way that you can have access to your funds. I know a lot of people decide, well, we know that owning a home is a long-term game, and it is a big asset all tied up with all of your funds in one place. And some people like to have their assets a little bit more liquid and more easy to access, because ultimately, even if you decide you want to sell your home, there are lots of things that go along with that, but it isn't a quick thing. You could decide that you wanted to sell your home today. Right now, on average, it would be on the market for about 30 days, even if you had a 30 or 60 day closing, you're not having access to your cash for at least 90, and that's in a really great scenario. Also, there's so many things to be discussed, and I wouldn't profess to be an expert, but if this is not your primary residence, you're going to be subject to capital gains tax when you sell it. So there are other ways to keep your money aside and have more readily available access to it. And it's an easy way to, you know, pay your rent and then make all of the household maintenance a expense for the owner of the actual house. You know, whether it is a hot water tank going or a home needing a furnace or a new air conditioning unit or new bylaws on how places need to be maintained. That's a lot of time, energy, and expense to keep up with those things. And if you just don't want that, number one, ever, or number two, for yourself anymore, then this is absolutely a fantastic option. I know a lot of seniors who like to just cash out their house and know that they have that as a nest egg for their senior years, and they just want to write a check because they don't want to worry about things like mowing a lawn or shoveling the snow or wondering how long the roof is going to last, etc., all those things I talked about. So I think that those are really good options, and I do think that renting is an option. And, you know, my husband and I sometimes talk about, let's just sell it all and rent a place, and then we can travel all the time and turn the key and leave it all to somebody else. But we're not quite there. We're still living the hustle and bustle of our life for the moment. So if you have any questions about what your options are, anytime, you're more than welcome to reach out to any realtor, any professional realtor. Would be happy to answer questions to you, because I do think that people think traditionally, you know, oh, it's a realtor, they're really just looking to sell houses. But really, we're looking to service our community. And if servicing our community means helping you find out what the right solution is for you, and that's a rental or a lease option, we're more than happy to help you out with that as well. So when you're thinking about where you're going to live, there's just a couple of things. And I'm going to talk about having an open mind and thinking about your living situation. I actually did a social media post this morning about why people move. And the primary reasons people move are, number one, because of a family structure change. And a family structure change can often mean, you know, a birth, a death, a divorce, all those things that make you stop and look, marriage, let's add the positive spin to that one as well. All those things make you stop and think about your current living situation and who you live with and whether or not the space is right for you anymore. So it's always great and exciting when there's a baby coming, and maybe when there's a second baby coming or even a third, and then you look around your two or three bedroom house and say, well, this isn't quite large enough anymore. Also, when people get divorced, it happens. It legit happens a lot. And it is actually really great to set people off on their new paths, whatever that might be. So they've probably been living together if they were married and they've decided that it's not working out. They're going to split and they need to go their own separate ways. So it's really important that they think about what they want their next chapter to look like. And that's a pivotal time when people figure out what they want for their future and how much money they have to fund that future. So that's really important. Unfortunately, people pass on, so there are estate sales, and that definitely is a family structure change. There's a lot of dynamics that happen when that happens. I'm currently working with one for a particular family, and there's three siblings. And so three siblings trying to get an entire estate wrapped up and a house sold can sometimes be complicated because siblings are siblings. And then, of course, if you have a financial ability change, and that could mean, you know, you got a big bonus and a giant raise, or you inherited some money and it's time to upscale. Or it could mean that things are a little bit tight, and they are for people right now. So they need to reevaluate how they're managing their household expenses, and they need to decide, should I stay where I am and try and, you know, plug through, or should I make some smart strategic moves? So sometimes things are better and you can get something bigger and better, and sometimes things are not, and you want to just even it all out and make sure that you're in a proper comfort zone for yourself from a finance perspective. And then the third reason that people move also is because of work transfers. And we live in a very transient town because we have a large military presence here. So we have people in and out every season, and we're almost in military transfer season again. We also get people, you know, coming to school here. I love it. I do hear a lot of people say that they come to school here, but they don't leave because they fall in love with Kingston, as I did as well. You have people coming in for studies for a short term. We have people who come in to teach for a short term, maybe for a contract or two. And, you know, even with the other private employers, including the jails, we have a lot of movement here. We also get a lot of people moving here because they are retiring and or people being posted out. And most people I know are sad when they leave our region. This is a fantastic region, but that is the other primary reason that people move. So when you're thinking about these major milestones that happen in your life and the reasons that people move, you really need to, you know, ask yourself a lot of questions and have conversations with the people that you're going to be living with. And think about being willing to open your mind to being outside of your comfort zone. So imagine, most people come forward and say, you know, I would like a move-in ready, three-bedroom house with a white picket fence in a nice neighborhood that's safe and I can get directly downtown, but also there's parks and close to the lake and I want a finished basement. That's great. We all want that. And the people say, oh, and I'd also like that for $500,000. That's not realistic for $500,000, unfortunately. We all have sort of that if I could wave the magic wand home in our mind, but then we also have to match that up or marry that up with our budget. So you need to think a little bit bigger sometimes and be open to other ideas. And maybe even, you know, getting into that picture of what you're imagining your house to be could mean you're sharing. A lot of people are, you know, splitting homes to be an upper level, kind of a duplex situation for one family unit, and then the lower level for another family unit. But together, they all get the benefits of that great property that they all imagined. So that's an interesting way. And then also, you might have thought that that landed for you specifically, you know, right in Kingston proper. But maybe you open up your mind a little bit and you could get that in Napanee, or you could get that in Gananoque, or you could get that in Amherst View, just with a little bit more drive time if you're coming into Kingston proper for work. But just being open to different ideas. And the other thing that is making sure you really check all of your expenses, one thing that I highly recommend, and I'm going to have someone on in a couple of weeks, is consulting with a mortgage lender before you get too far down any process, because they have great tables and scenarios that they can actually run a full budget for you and tell you, you know, based on this home that you're either trying to rent or purchase, this is what your monthly expenses are going to be from the perspective of the just general housing. But like I talked about, insurance, heat, hydro, and then getting into even bigger things like, do you also have a car payment? Do you, you know, how much do you spend in food and entertainment? And what does that look like from you, for you, on a math perspective? And can this be a viable option for you? But you really need to think about all those little things because they add up very quickly. And you might have to just start a little bit smaller. So again, we all have the picture of where we'd like to live. Ultimately, I would love to live on the lake, but I'm not there yet. But we all have the picture of where we'd like to live. But it's not for today. It might be for our future vision. And that's okay. You know, getting into homeownership, if that's the choice that you make, is always great because real estate has appreciated historically over the last 50 years. So it's not a bad bet. But like I was mentioning about having access to your money, it's not a quick bet either. So you need to be in real estate if you're purchasing for the long game. And if you're not purchasing, then maybe it isn't the time for that. And there are other strategies and ways to manage your money and manage your living situation. So just being open to the fact that, you know, maybe your first house is going to be a bit of a fixer-upper, or maybe it's going to be in one of the peripheral neighborhoods and not right in the heart of the Kingston waterfront. But, you know, one day you might get there if that's even the path you choose to get on in the future. The other thing that I would highly recommend for everybody, just on a personal note, is just being patient with yourself. It's interesting because, you know, in my family in particular, my husband and I purchased our first home when I think we were 25. I think he was even younger than that because he's younger than me. But we purchased our first home when we were 25. And it's not unusual. And both my adult children talk to me often about now it's just not that easy to even save up and accumulate a down payment, let alone the entire cost of housing just hasn't kept pace with inflation. So what we, you know, my husband and I think in the beginning we're living off of $230,000 a year salaries, and we could do that with a house and two kids and a car, and you can almost not support one person on a, call that $60,000 a year salary now with the cost of living. So you have to be very creative, but be patient with yourself. These are difficult times, folks, and you know, if you've got your head up high and you're working your way through life, good for you, because it's tough times and there's a lot of negativity that I'm not going to dwell on. But also be willing to ask for help. Make sure you consult professionals. There are amazing industry professionals that'll support you in any way, whether it's a financial planner, whether or not it's a mortgage agent, whether or not it's a lease agent or a realtor. We are all here, and our ultimate goal for all of us is to make sure that people have safe housing. It's a place where they can be happy and they can thrive and they can afford without being worried on a monthly basis whether or not that they can make their rent or make their own mortgage payment, because there's enough stress in life that that's not something you need to be thinking about on a month-to-month basis. Make sure you do also, though, leave yourself a little bit of a slush fund. And I know that they always say, you know, make sure that you have 3 months worth of expenses in the bank. That can be a large amount of money, and sometimes you just can't sit on that amount of money. But knowing that there is some percentage of your income that is being set aside for unexpected expenses is a great strategy and a great tactic. And even if that means, you know, $10 out of a paycheck, or the one time that you skipped your Starbucks run, you put that in a pot, it does add up over time. And then, you know, ultimately when you are either trying to come up with first and last month's rent, or you remember it's property tax season, you know you have somewhere to pull from. So there's a lot of strategies. And like I mentioned, I am going to be bringing on both a financial planner in the future, which I'm not, and I will make sure that I say that clearly, and a mortgage agent, which I'm also not, but I am going to bring them on as my industry expert guests in the very near future so that they can talk in greater detail about those things. Wherever you are living, I do truly hope that today and every day you are safe and you're well, and that you're finding this information helpful in ultimately finding your way home and making sure that, you know, we can all live and thrive in our community. It's an amazing community that we have the privilege to live in, and I'm proud to represent it. Have a great day.
Please welcome to the stage, Don Lemon.
The First Amendment is not just a legal guarantee. We have to keep fighting for the First Amendment and fighting for all of our rights. It is the breath and the lungs of democracy. I'm not an activist. I'm not a protester. I am a journalist. And my calling is not to shout, but my calling is to witness. And that's what they're afraid of.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Same-gender couples get property rights in the Philippines, UK trans people can use toilets anywhere except work, and trumped-up charges plague gay journalist Don Lemon. Those stories and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Jill Bainline.
And I'm Sarah Montague.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending February 14th, 2026. Cohabitating same-gender couples in the Philippines can now be recognized as joint owners of property that they acquire during their relationship. The February 5th ruling by the Supreme Court has seemingly moved the Southeast Asian Islands nation one step closer to marriage equality. Two women had purchased a house and lot together during their relationship. The property in the Manila suburb Quezon City was only registered under one partner's name. When they split up, the unregistered partner wanted to partition the property or sell it. She produced a document signed by her ex confirming that she had paid about half of the purchase price for the property and its renovation costs. The registered partner first agreed, then rejected the document and broke the deal. So the unregistered partner filed a complaint. The Philippines Family Code defines civil marriage as a special contract of permanent union between a man and a woman. Because they're denied civil marriage in the predominantly Roman Catholic country, the court concluded that property questions involving same-gender couples are governed by Article 148 of the Code, which covers unmarried cohabitation. That provision makes the properties acquired by both of the parties through their actual joint contribution of money, property, or industry owned by them in common in portion to their respective contributions. The Supreme Court reversed lower courts that had rejected the unregistered partner's claim. It found that the signed acknowledgement was sufficient proof of her actual contributions to the property under Article 148, and that she is therefore entitled to demand its partition. The High Court issued a press release soon after the ruling was announced, calling on the government to address same-sex couples' rights, as courts alone cannot resolve all related policy concerns.
Trans people in the United Kingdom can use bathrooms and changing rooms that match their gender identity, except in the workplace. That's the result of a February 13th Supreme Court ruling that grows out of last year's somewhat convoluted decision that trans women are not legally women under the Equality Act, but are nevertheless protected from discrimination. Now, the Trans Solidarity Alliance says the situation for trans people, employers, and service providers is completely incoherent. In this week's ruling, the justices decided that employers must provide separate bathrooms based on the worker's gender assigned at birth. That specifically denies trans employees access to bathrooms that match their gender identity. However, trans customers of the same establishments may be allowed to use gender-appropriate bathrooms. One justice told The Independent that service providers ranging from restaurants and bars to hospitals and government facilities should be guided by common sense and benevolence that is not blinkered by unyielding ideologies. The justices added in their ruling that employers are allowed to provide gender-neutral bathrooms for use by all staff, including trans employees. Without such accommodations, the organization Trans Solidarity points out that trans workers would not be able to do their jobs. They underscore the perplexity, saying, "What bathroom a trans person can use in a pub may now depend on whether they are there as an employee or for a drink."
Public school officials in the UK are being directed to notify parents if their child's behavior suggests that they are questioning their gender identity. Legally binding guidance issued on February 12th by the Department of Education also instructs school staff to discourage students from socially transitioning and to exercise extreme caution using a trans student's chosen name or pronouns. Under the guidance, trans students must not be allowed to use campus bathrooms or changing rooms that match their gender identity. This is about pragmatic support for teachers, reassurance for parents, and above all, the safety and well-being of children and young people, according to Education Secretary Bridget Phillipson. The guidance stands firmly on last year's much-criticized CAS review. That's a study that condemns the availability of puberty blockers and hormone therapies for trans young people. It led the government to ban their use in most cases. Cal Horton believes that the new guidance will do more harm than good for trans young people. Horton is a research fellow at the Oxford Brookes Business School, specializing in trans issues. Their analysis echoes that of several other critics. In Horton's words, trans children need to be supported and respected in order to be safe at school, in order to access their right to education, in order to enjoy their childhood. Instead, we are seeing a complete ban on access to appropriate toilets, PE, accommodation on school trips, a complete erosion of their rights. Horton concludes, it will lead to children avoiding the bathroom, avoiding exercise, missing out on school trips, dropping out of school, and losing any hope of education, equality, friendship, or happiness.
It's the third strike for New Hampshire's trans student bathroom ban. Republican Governor Kelly Ayotte has for the second time vetoed a bill to require trans students to use sex-segregated school bathrooms and changing facilities that match their gender assigned at birth. Republican Governor Chris Sununu vetoed a similar bill the year before. In her 2025 veto message, Ayotte complained that the measure was overly broad and impractical to enforce, potentially creating an exclusionary environment for some of our citizens. The Republican-controlled legislature failed to secure a two-thirds majority vote needed to override Ayotte's veto last December. Observers believe an override will fail again. Aimee Terevecchia of the statewide LGBTQ group 603 Equality applauded Governor Ayotte's veto, proclaiming, "Bathroom bans simply have no place in New Hampshire." In Terevecchia's words, in a time of unrelenting legislative attacks and misinformation campaigns around transgender people and their rights, transgender and gender non-conforming people deserve safe access to public spaces as they go about living, working, and contributing to our communities.
Finally, embattled U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi's fiery five-hour joust with minority Democrats culminated in an explosive confrontation with Vermont's lesbian Congressmember Becca Bowant. The February 11th hearing before the House Judiciary Committee focused on the Justice Department's failure to release all of the files related to the late convicted child sex trafficker Jeffrey Epstein. Both congressional chambers overwhelmingly approved opening the files, and the law was signed by Bondi's boss, President Donald Trump. Bondi reprised her belligerent performance before a Senate committee late last year, evading relevant questions while rifling through a binder of misleading information to use against Democratic committee members. Near the end of the hearing, Bondi attempted to deflect balance examination by referring to a 2024 House resolution condemning the phrase, "From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free." Bowant joined more than 40 other Democrats voting against it and called the measure yet another way to sow division and demonize Palestinians, according to the Jewish News Syndicate. When Bowant asked if the Justice Department had seriously investigated powerful officials whose names appear in the Epstein files, Bondi's evasion enraged Bowant.
"I want the record to reflect that, you know, with this anti-Semitic culture right now, she voted against a resolution condemning.
Oh,
is Jewish. Oh, I just want to be clear.
Oh, do you want to go there, Attorney General? Want to go there? Are you serious?
To the gentleman
talking about anti-Semitism
Carolina,
to a woman who lost her grandfather in the Holocaust?
I reclaim my time.
Really?
As some of her Democratic committee colleagues came to her defense, Balint stormed out of the chamber. She returned to sit with the Epstein survivors. Bondi just snickered.
That's NewsWrap, global queer news with attitude for the week ending February 14th, 2026. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
NewsWrap is written by Greg Gordon and Lucia Chappell, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help keep us in airs around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm Sarah Montague. Stay healthy.
And I'm Joe Bainline. Stay safe.
You're listening to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. Now it's time to rewind the rainbow. This is the Rainbow Rewind,
where we take a quick look back at the people and the moments that made queer history.
I'm Sherry Lund.
And I'm Brian DeShazer.
This week, we honor the February birthday of Anais Nin.
As June walked towards me from the darkness of the garden into the light of the door, I saw for the first time the most beautiful woman on earth. A startlingly white face, burning dark eyes, a face so alive, I felt, it would consume itself before my eyes.
Anais Nin is considered an important figure in LGBTQ plus and feminist history, not necessarily because she identified strongly as a lesbian, but because she was a pioneer in advocating for sexual freedom, bisexuality, and women's sexual agency without shame.
Now let's rewind to a few February key queer milestones. In 1982, Wisconsin becomes the first state in the nation to make it unlawful for private businesses to discriminate based on sexual orientation in employment and housing. And in 2017, Moonlight becomes the first LGBT film to win the Academy Award for Best Picture.
A reminder that our history is built on courage, creativity, and community.
That's this week's Rainbow Rewind, because remembering our past fuels our pride. I'm Sherry Lund.
And I'm Brian DeShazer. Stay tuned. More This Way Out is coming up.
Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
The U.S. Constitution's First Amendment free press rights clashed with its First Amendment freedom of religion when a gay African-American journalist was arrested. But was U.S. President Donald Trump's personal antipathy towards Don Lemon the real reason behind the charges? Federal judges have rejected the case concerning the former CNN host's coverage of a January 18th protest that breached a Minneapolis church whose pastor doubles as an immigration enforcement agent. Failing that, Attorney General Pam Bondi tweeted that she herself had directed the arrest. Lemon was in a Beverly Hills hotel on his way to cover the Grammy Awards when he was detained on January 29th by more than two dozen Homeland Security and FBI agents. He made a surprise appearance at the Human Rights Campaign's New York Gala on February 7th.
Hi, everyone. How are you? How was your week? Oh, let me tell you. All of those jailhouse scenes you see in certain movies, no, not that cute. Thank you guys for everything. Thank you for your support. Good evening. Good evening, family. How are you? Can I have a few minutes of your time? Because this is the only thing, I did Jimmy Kimmel and I'm doing this. Because this is really important. Because the freedom to live in America and be who you want, love who you want, it's a human right, right? The freedom of the press in this country is a human right. So for me, tonight feels less like a gala that you guys are here, and it feels more like a gathering, just sort of hanging out. A gathering of people who still believe that truth matters, right? Dignity is not optional. Freedom is not guaranteed. We've seen that in this time. This past week reminded me of something that I thought that I understood. The First Amendment is not just a legal guarantee. We have to keep fighting for the First Amendment and fighting for all of our rights. It is the breath in the lungs of democracy. It is the bedrock of our democracy. And when that breath is threatened, all of us can feel it before you can even explain it. You know that saying, I can't breathe? Our society cannot breathe without the freedom of the press, the freedom of speech. So last week, I felt it. I felt the smothering, the suffocation. I saw how quickly that a voice can be targeted, how easily truth can be distorted. Don't pay attention to the noise, people. Do not. I saw how fast a story can be turned into a warning. But I'm not an activist. I'm not a protester. I am a journalist. And my calling is not to shout, but my calling is to witness. And that's what they're afraid of that witness. To tell, you can applaud if you want. It is to tell. I feel so comfortable here. I could just, you know, hang out. It's to tell the truth as clearly as I can. With clarity comes consequences. You guys know that, right? You saw what happened to me. There is a passage in the scripture that says, the truth shall set you free, or depending on which church or which Bible or which rendition of the Bible, King James or whatever, it'll say the truth shall make you free. But it doesn't say that the truth will make you safe. It does not say that it will make the powerful comfortable. That's not part of the promise. It does not say that it's going to spare you from the cost of seeing too clearly. And I think most times as members of the LGBTQ plus community, we see things a lot clearer than most people. And right now, that cost of the truth is rising, like the price of eggs and everything else in this country. We are watching an administration right now that treats the Constitution not as a covenant, but as an inconvenience that they don't have to abide by. This is inconvenient, and this is getting in our way. It's authoritarianism. And we need to be careful, because the very little that's left of our democracy can be gone in a second, if it's not too late already. We're watching leaders who speak of law and order while trampling on the very laws that restrain power, picking up people on the streets without due process. We are watching the Bill of Rights praised in speeches and ignored in practice. The First Amendment especially has become a target to this administration. Reporters are attacked as enemies, enemies of the people. How long have you been hearing that? 10 years now since Donald Trump has been in office. Facts are dismissed as disloyalty. Questions are treated as threats. And here's the truth that is harder to say. The most dangerous thing to any authority is not rebellion. I go back to that word. It is witness. It is, they're afraid of the pen, the cameras, the witness. It's not outrage, but it's evidence. Witnessing is evidence. It's not noise, but truth spoken clearly. America loves the idea of a free press. We like to say, freedom press, freedom of speech, yeah, we're free. Like to recite it like a hymn. Celebrates it as if it's a tradition. Invokes it as if it is a slogan. But the press is only welcome when it does not disturb comfort. That's what power does. It doesn't want their comfort disturbed. When it does not expose the power would rather conceal. What power would rather conceal? That's when it is welcome. The free press does not exist to reassure the nation. It exists to reveal it to itself. The free press is a mirror to a society. It's where we test our ideas. It's where we test our democracy. We have seen what happens when that revelation is punished. We have seen journalists arrested while covering protests. We have seen reporters threatened for investigating corruption and violation. We have seen books removed from schools because they told inconvenient truths about race, gender, and sexuality. What is that? And we have seen journalists singled out, smeared, and targeted simply for doing their jobs. You guys know who James Baldwin is, right? My literary hero. He understood that clarity carries consequences. Of course you know who Dr. King is. He knew that truth invites punishment. And generations before us understood that when truth threatens power, power will respond. And it won't always be nice. Most of the times, it is not nice. I would say all of the time. So last week, I felt the weight of that truth in a very, very personal way. Can you imagine the state having control of your freedom simply because they don't like that you are doing your job? So that was very frightening to me. But in my time when I was there, I thought about all the people who'd come before me. I thought about all of the people who fought for civil rights, who fought for gay rights, all of the people who were at Stonewall, Marsha P. Clark. I'm like, yes, those are the people, those are the real heroes. And so what's happening to me, I have at least in this time that I'm living now, more agency, more resources, more rights, and I would hope, than the people who were fighting for our freedom and our civil rights. But I also felt something else. I felt the quiet courage of colleagues who refused to be intimidated. When I walked out, I was surprised by the statements that people had made, by the support that I had. I felt the solidarity of people who understood that this moment was bigger than one story, one journalist, one controversy. Because when a society punishes journalists, it is not punishing a profession. What it's punishing is reality. When reporters are silenced, citizens are blinded. When truth is criminalized, freedom becomes fragile. When the First Amendment becomes optional, democracy becomes hollow. There is an old spiritual that says, does anybody go to the black church here? Anybody? Anybody? Anybody know that old spiritual that said, ain't gonna let nobody turn me around, turn me around, turn me around. Ain't gonna let nobody turn me around, gonna keep on a walking, keep on a talking, marching on to freedom land. And that's what we're doing. That song was never loud. It was never loud for the sake of noise. It was steady, it was stubborn, it was unyielding. And that's what a free press must be in this time. Not, you don't have to be theatrical, you don't have to be reckless, but unwilling to be turned around, unwilling to give false equivalency. Unwilling to give people a platform who simply want to lie and obfuscate and demean people who are not in power, especially people of color and people of LGBTQ folks. So I stand here tonight, not as a victim of a difficult week, but as a witness to a larger truth. Freedom is fragile, but it's not finished. I should add a word to that when I was writing this. Freedom is fragile, but it is not finished yet, because it can be. Truth is contested, but it is not defeated yet. Democracy is strained, but it is not silent yet, right? We got to keep fighting. A free press is not only holy because journalists are perfect, it is holy because it is one of the few places where power can still be questioned, where stories can still be told, where the voiceless can still be heard. And the LGBTQ plus community knows this very deeply and personally. Every right that exists today, it exists because someone refused to be silent. Because someone told the truth when silence would have been safer. Comfort is a poison. Everyone is so used to being comfortable right now. They're not used to sacrificing anything. We have grown so comfortable. We have everything right in the palms of our hands. We have a computer that we carry around every day that can get us all the information that we ever need. And you have your own network in your pocket. But we have become really comfortable. We got to be careful, because that comfort will be the end of our democracy and the end of our rights. All of those things, all of the rights that we have today, as I say, yet, because someone insisted on being seen. So tonight in this room, I see people who have chosen to insist. This is an organization that has chosen to insist. So I am not here to retreat. I am not going to retreat. I am not here to dramatize. I am here to testify in the way that journalists testify, by saying plainly that truth matters, witness matters, and silence has never been neutral. And as long as there are people willing to speak, as long as there are journalists willing to observe and tell a story, as long as there are communities willing to defend dignity, the light is still on. It has not gone out yet. And if the light is still on, the darkness has not won. So thank you for carrying that light, and thank you for your courage, and thank you for letting me bear witness with you tonight. Have a great evening, everybody.
A week after his human rights campaign speech, independent journalist Don Lemon appeared in court on February 13th, along with Minneapolis reporter Georgia Fort and others in the church protest case. All pleaded not guilty to two federal crimes: conspiring to violate someone's constitutional rights and violating the FACE Act, which ironically began as a law to protect women's health clinics. Lemon spoke to the press after the court proceedings.
People are finally realizing what this administration is all about. The process is the punishment with them. And like all of you here in Minnesota, the great people of Minnesota, I will not be intimidated. I will not back down. I will fight these baseless charges, and I will not be silenced.
Black gay journalist Don Lemon's attorneys say that they will fight the case on constitutional grounds. He has the support of the International Women's Media Foundation, the National Association of Black Journalists, and NLGJA, the Association of LGBTQ Plus Journalists. Thanks for finding This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. NewsWrap was reported this week by Joe Bainline and Sarah Montague and produced by Brian DeShazer. The Rainbow Rewind was written by Sherry Lunn and produced by her co-host Brian DeShazer. Thanks to the Human Rights Campaign for sharing Don Lemon's speech at their New York City gala. Seals and Crofts and Sweet Honey and the Rock performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks Jim Kennedy of Dayton, Ohio, Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley celebrating their 50th year together, and all the listener donors who make this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email us at info@thiswayout.org, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts, and on KCMJ Colorado Springs, Colorado, WHYS Eau Claire, Wisconsin, CFRC Kingston, Ontario, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned, y'all.
Are you listening from inside a local prison, or do you have a friend or loved one in a local prison or youth detention center? Calls from Home is a monthly radio program for you. On Calls from Home, we share voicemails, messages, song requests, and dedications. Anyone can contact us with a message or song request for a friend or loved one on the inside. To get in touch, call or text 613-917-1390. Email cfrcprisonradio@riseup.net or send us a message on Instagram @cfrcprisonradio. The CFRC radio signal reaches the following local and regional prisons: Millhaven, Bath, Collins Bay, and Frontenac, Joyceful in Pittsburgh, the Sundance Youth Detention Center here in Kingston, Quinte in Napanee, and the Cape Vincent Correctional